Inspiring, isn't it? When we meet people whose attention is focused outward on the support and encouragement of others, that's what inspired me about Joy Payton and why I'm excited to share her with you in this podcast. Joy Payton has dedicated herself to building pathways for speakers of all sorts of languages to become more visible in our country, and dedicated herself to helping heritage speakers and language learners of all kinds to connect with and celebrate each other. In her humble leadership style, Joy reminds all of us that our country and our social fabric are strengthened when we tap into and connect our identities, which flow from our languages and cultures. Listen for the stories here of adults who have cried from the realization that someone wanted to hear about their heritage. Maybe you or someone you know has a longing to have their personal story heard. Maybe the stories Joy Payton tells are also about you. Certainly, they're about how to strengthen and celebrate this wonderfully diverse nation and world of ours. Enjoy the podcast.
Hi, I'm Nora Jones. Welcome to It's About Language. This podcast connects language and culture to life, learning, and hope. You'll experience insightful conversations with creative leaders in the fields of education, business, arts, and science. My guests shed light on the impact of language and culture on individuals and society as they share their stories and experiences. You'll be informed and inspired as we explore how language and culture make us human and bring hope in the midst of a challenging world. It's my great pleasure today to welcome my guest and friend, Joy Payton. Hi, Joy.
Hi, Nora. It's lovely to be with you.
It is a great pleasure. I'm very excited about this conversation today because you bring so much background to what we'll be discussing today. We focused a lot on working with heritage languages, mother tongue education, which is something that you've been working on issues for, as you say in your biography, for over 30 years. You're also a senior fellow at the Center for Applied Linguistics. We call that CAL for short hereafter. Mm-hmm. And you also participate on the advisory board for the national lobbying organization in Washington, D.C., that I also serve on, the Joint National Committee on Languages, National Council of Languages and International Studies, which we'll call JNCL for short during this podcast. Joy, why? How did you get engaged with heritage language?
Yeah, thank you for asking. When I was at Cal, I was vice president, and the president was Donna Christian. And we started connecting with Dick Brecht at the National Foreign Language Center and with other people, Maria Carrera at Cal State Long Beach, and saying, you know, heritage languages need a bigger visibility. We weren't talking about them. This was 1990. We weren't talking much about them. And so we said, okay, let's hold a conference. So we collaborated. It was Cal, NFLC, and Cal State Long Beach collaborated and held a conference at Cal State Long Beach focused on heritage languages. And it was a huge success. Joshua Fishman spoke, Guadalupe Valdez spoke, many other really notable people spoke and were there. It was very exciting. And also there was an earthquake that weekend in Joshua Tree, which is close to level seven. And at the end of the conference, Dick Brecht said, "We held our first heritage language conference and the earth moved." And
well said, Dick.
And that was true. So then 2 years later, we held our second one in Washington, D.C. And after that, Dick Brecht said, "I like holding conferences. Yes, it's important, but we need to move forward somehow together." And so we joined together and formed the Alliance for the Advancement of Heritage Languages. And the Alliance went on for maybe 15 years. We developed so many materials, which are still on the coalition webpage. We called them digest papers about issues in heritage language education. We were documenting heritage language programs. we went to UCLA every year for the Heritage Language Conference. And then some of us got together, and these were community-based schools people. Renata Ludagni, Ana Lucia Lico, Tommy Liu, got together and said, yes, this is great. The field has shifted. There's an interest in heritage languages now, heritage language learners, heritage language speakers, heritage language programs. But what about community-based schools? It was mostly, as you know, because you go to conferences, it was mostly university people at the conferences talking about their university heritage language programs, which were very new and very exciting. But what about community-based schools? And so, and then we realized that with the Alliance, we were focusing on heritage languages, yes, but not necessarily community-based schools. So we said, you know what? Let's let the National Heritage Language Resource Center, NHLRC, focus on heritage languages generally. And they were happy to, and that's why we've come into a very strong partnership with them. And we will focus on community-based schools. So we formed the coalition in 2012, the Coalition of Community-Based Heritage Language Schools. And that's where my focus is now, although I partner with, you know, the broader heritage language community.
Indeed. Thank you for that history. That's extremely clear, and I can see why the growth of this need would have been so essential to what you were discovering. So talk a little bit about the community-based heritage language schools, that coalition.
Okay, yes. Well, these are schools that operate primarily on Saturday, Sunday nights, you know, weekends and nights. So they're outside of the public, private, and charter school system. Joshua Fishman actually documented community-based schools. In the 1960s, he documented over 1,800. In the 1980s, he documented about 6,500 of those schools, teaching hundreds of languages, and he was very much into that. Now, a survey of these schools has not been conducted since then, the 1980s,
wow,
because we haven't had the funding to do it, we haven't taken the initiative to do it. But they are, I mean, as you can tell, there are many of them, and these are founded and run by speakers of the language who live in the community and want to give their own children and the children in the community the opportunity to develop proficiency in that language, to use that language, to love that language, and to develop proficiency in it. And some of the schools, it's their vision that they will develop proficiency at very high levels. I visited the German school in Connecticut a few years ago. I interviewed a 10th grade, in the Saturday school, and his proficiency was already high enough that he could pass the German test in Germany so that he could go to school
wow.
in Germany. I asked him, have you studied German in your school? He goes, no, they don't offer German. I said, have you taken another language? And he said, yes, I took Spanish for a while, but the rate we were going, I would never get anywhere with it. We were going so slowly. So that's another thing to say, is the schools are often founded and run by community members who are highly dedicated to making these schools successful. And many of the students are developing very high levels of proficiency and also engagement with the language, engagement with the culture. Oh, I'll just say that so far we have documented in our survey of community-based schools 400 schools teaching 37 languages in 35 states. That's good, and we're connecting the schools, and that is for sure. We are connecting them, we're making them visible, but we have a very long way to go in documenting and connecting with these schools.
Why do you think that's so? Do you feel like it's underrepresented then?
Well, It's not that easy to connect. I'll tell you that we very soon, there are six of us who are part of the coalition core team. We very early on realized that there's no way that we ourselves could make these connections. No way. And so when we meet a person who's highly connected with these schools, we ask them to be a language representative for those schools and work with us. And so they connect their communities to our annual conference, and our next one is October 8th and 9th this year. They help to document the schools. The people in the schools are very, very busy. They don't have time to participate in our surveys. They don't necessarily have time to connect with us. We're very happy for the ones who do, but it's difficult. It's not. And I'll say another thing, that these schools, I think you might know this. I'd love to hear your comment about this. These schools are pretty invisible. You know, I just said there are thousands of them teaching hundreds of languages. Do you know, Nora, what community-based schools there are in your neighborhood? And if you say no, I'm not going to look down on you.
Well, I will say no, that's for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, my kids went to George Mason High School in Falls Church, Virginia. And I met a person who told me, oh, I have a Chinese school at George Mason High School on Saturday. Did you know that?
Wow.
No, it's one block away from me. The schools are pretty invisible. And so one of our goals, can I tell you our goals?
Of course, please.
Our goals, our vision are to connect these schools with each other so that we can all collaborate. Give visibility to the schools so that they are part of the national language learning landscape. When people think about language proficiency and language learning, they think, in addition to public, private, and charter schools and dual language schools, which are a hot topic right now, they also think about community-based schools. And then finally, to advocate for the schools so that the students can receive the kinds of awards that other students are receiving, like the Seal of Biliteracy and the Global Seal and other kinds of credits and awards, that they can receive that because of their work in that school. Now, I'm going to tell you another great idea, which Amanda Seawald at JNCL Nicholas, who you know very well, mentioned the other day. She said, wouldn't it be fabulous if, let's say, a student in a public school who's highly proficient in Bulgarian, right? Bulgarian is not offered at the high school. So where is that student going to develop their proficiency in Bulgarian over time? Well, if there's a Bulgarian community-based school that they could connect with, that would add value to their lives. So what value do the community-based schools bring to our language learning enterprise? That's where we're moving.
Absolutely fabulous. And I have to say that I'm just aching personally because my heritage background of Croatian was neglected completely until I myself begged my father to take me to meet my family and to spend, as it turned out then, thereafter, my summers with my family in Croatia, where I started out as a rank beginner in Croatian, to have been able to experience the heritage language and culture while I was growing up would have been transformational. Yes. It's bound to touch the hearts and not only the skill sets of the young people that participate. As a career educator and certified Gallup Strengths Coach, I engage with you and your team to bring energy, focus, and breakthroughs to all you do. Fluency Consulting provides workshops, presentations, talks, and team-building events for K-16 educators and education-oriented organizations and businesses. Get energized, experience new insights, pathways, and perspectives. For more information, see our show notes or go to fluency.consulting.com. What are some of the stories that come to mind that touch on the transformation for those who have participated in such heritage schools?
You mean the students who have participated?
Well,
Or the
primarily, I
teachers?
guess, when I'm asking about the students, but you have come across life-changing stories, I'm quite confident, in not only students, but also in those that serve them or have then applied those wonderful people to jobs or other opportunities, whatever it is that comes to your mind.
Yeah, well, one story is a number of years ago, I was at ACTFL. You know, it used to be the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. Now they just call themselves ACTFL. Mm-hmm. I was at their annual conference, and my colleague from Cal called me on my cell phone and said, there's somebody who I want you to, somebody it would be very good for you to meet. And so I said, okay. And so I texted that person and I said, meet me at the exhibit hall at such and such a time. So we met, we sat down and had coffee. And I'm not going to tell you her name or her language because I don't have permission to tell. I didn't ask her for permission to tell this story.
Okay.
But we sat down to have coffee and she started crying, like seriously crying. And I said, what? And she said, this is my first time at this conference. I have been walking around saying to people, hi, I'm, and this is my language, and I teach in a Saturday school, a community-based school. And people just kind of look at me and go, wow, that's interesting. And then they either walk away or keep talking. So going from, another story. At our conference, I always take the language representatives out to dinner after the conference. And again, I was sitting next to one of the language representatives from a different language. And he started crying.
Wow.
And he said, you know, this is the first time that people outside our language community have really wanted to talk to me.
Wow.
Wow. So connections across language communities were not happening. And in some cases, they now are. And the other thing is that therefore, these leaders in their own language community, or maybe not their language community, maybe in their school, are now becoming leaders and advocates on a national scale. So they are working to get the students in their programs to be able to earn the seal of iLiteracy and the global seal. That's a big effort of theirs. They are leading workshops at our conference. They are writing things for everyone's benefit. Right now, we're working together on guidelines. There are guidelines for earning the seal of iLiteracy, but we're adapting them for community-based school leaders. And these are it has to be community-based school leaders who are writing the document. So, number one, making connections. Number two, gaining visibility. Number three, gaining a sense of identity, a sense of power, a sense of contribution to the field. And now with Dick Brecht, the project that Dick Brecht is working on, America's Language Initiative, community-based schools and Native American schools, which you and I haven't even talked about yet, Native American schools, that's what the focus is. And now these schools will be, those that are exemplary will be documented on the America's Languages Initiative website, and they'll be recognized through a number of means. So here's another area, moving toward exemplary. And what does that look like? And then now I've been talking about leaders and schools, but for students, some of these leaders are working very hard to connect the students in the program with the wider community. They're setting up community activities, summer camps where community people come in, where they go out into the community, tutoring programs where older students tutor younger students, interviews. I was on an interview with a Hindi group, and it was high school students talking online with leaders, business leaders, business and other career leaders, other professionals about how they use their language. So all kinds of outreach kinds of things into the community, into the career field, how to engage parents. How to engage students is a huge challenge, which you can imagine. When your child is 3, 5, 7, you can take them to Saturday school. Uh-huh. They get old enough to play soccer, play piano, one, two, many, many things. And they're going, wait, why am I doing this? And so engaging students throughout their school career is a huge challenge that many of the schools are working on and succeeding.
What are some of the reasons why they are succeeding? By approach, by goal? What are those reasons?
By their approach. Like I mentioned, the German school in Connecticut, where many of the teachers are certified. They teach also in the public school as well as at the Saturday school. They are, they are developing instruction that is engaging to the project-based learning, where the students work, they don't just learn stuff out of a textbook, but they work together on a project. Inquiry-based learning, where it's the students' questions and interests that drive the curriculum, mm-hmm. the themes and the topics, and we'd really like to know about this, you know, like things like, well, why are we here at all? Yeah. Why is our community in the United States?
Yeah.
Why do we care about this language? So the students and the teacher together come up with the curriculum, the themes, the topics. We have examples of these on our website. Those are a couple. Oh, another one I already said, having the older students, the teenagers, mm-hmm. on Saturday be teaching in the younger students' classes.
Ah.
They're not just taking classes. They are taking class, but they also go and teach the younger kids. And that really engages them and the younger kids. You can imagine, right?
I certainly can. And another group that I would love to come back to that you alluded to, I absolutely want to, the Native American groups. We're looking at
right.
legislation now that would have a national center for information about Native American languages. How
yes.
do these then apply, these heritage community-based learning with our Native American?
Well, unfortunately, and this is really unfortunate, I don't know a lot about Native American schools. But when I have connected with them, we have connected and documented a couple of the programs on the Alliance website. Mm-hmm. And when we give presentations at conferences, there will be a Native American person there who what they call their language depends on them. Some of them call it their tribe or whatever. Mm-hmm. Different groups have different vocabulary. Let's just Native American languages is okay. We believe that their programs are very much like ours. They're conducted outside of the regular school day, mm-hmm. Saturday, Sunday evenings. Founded and directed by people from the community. Very similar, but that's, I mean, this is an unfortunate thing that we haven't had strong connections with that community. And I'm hoping that through the America's Languages Initiative, we will, because we'll all be working together on the same thing.
Certainly hope so. Joy, as a senior fellow at the Center for Applied Linguistics, what is Cal's role in your work and in connecting these heritage languages?
Right. Well, Cal cares a great deal about these languages and these schools, and we talked for a while about Cal setting up an online community for these schools. Mm-hmm. And I think they still want to. It's just that Cal is Cal staff are very, very busy. But they speak at our conference every year, and they send out announcements about our work. They work as a partner with us. If we need, you know, information, they're there to do it. They have the Alliance for the Advancement of Heritage Languages was held at Cal, and all of that information is still at Cal. Ah. Oh, and Cal has recently developed a set of assessments for heritage language schools, heritage language learners. Okay. I won't say for community-based schools, but for heritage language learners. So Cal has a lot of different things, you know, that they're interested in, but definitely community-based schools are part of their interest, and they're highly supportive of our work.
Phenomenal. That's great. Thank you. Now, I have a question about the practical applications. You alluded to that earlier, too. We have a change going on in the United States over the way that we view the usefulness of language. Some of the instruction is trying to catch up to this vision of the importance of global application of language knowledge. So connect again where you see the nation, the United States, going, how these community-based heritage language schools and your work connect with the purposefulness of language, the global citizenship of language.
Right. Well, I think it's safe to say that we're in the midst of a shift toward a recognition of the value of being bilingual and multilingual. You can see that shift, the development and the growth of dual language programs where students are learning two languages, English and another language, or I should say, yeah, English and another language, and that's the goal of the program. And those programs are growing and growing. People are writing now significantly about the value of bilingualism. At the same time, I mean, I'm thinking, oh, my friends are going to go, Joy, you're getting way too excited. at the same time, language programs are being cut because of funding. And so that's something that people are aware of, something that people are working on. So, I mean, people are working on it. Another thing that is making a difference, and I've said this probably too many times, is the seal of biliteracy from ACTFL, that ACTFL advocates for, and the global seal. These two types of recognition that students can earn. So on their high school diploma, if they have reached a certain level of proficiency in both English and one other language, it can be more than one, but at least one other language, they can get the seal of biliteracy if their state and district participate in that. Mm-hmm. And that makes a difference because it tells the students this is important, and this could make a difference in your career. I also think that there's more talk now. I don't know if you'd agree, Nora. I'd love to see what you think. That there's more talk now about the value of knowing another language in being a global citizen, being engaged with communities, understanding other communities, having empathy. Yeah, let's just say understanding. Traveling and traveling in an intelligent way.
Yes.
I think there's more focus on that. Do you agree?
I do. I think that there is a real push now nationally to understand that very trajectory of the importance of language, no question. And the economic impact on the United States in this case, too.
Right, right. And an example of people who are thinking about this, there's a person named Steve Levine, and he just wrote a book called America's Bilingual Century. And he's arguing that the United States is going to become a bilingual, multilingual country. that we didn't realize the value of it. He himself didn't realize the value of it until he was an adult. And then he said, hey, hold on, hold on. And he learned another language. I think it was Spanish. I should know. But anyway, he learned another language. He did what you did. He traveled, learned it, used it, and now he sees the value. And he's just published a book about that, and he's talking about it. So I think the interest and the knowledge are just going to continue to grow.
I agree. And one of the aspects is you've referred several times to the seal of biliteracy with the individual states, and the vast majority of the states have now approved that seal of biliteracy. Right. 41, I believe. My count might be off a little bit, but not by much. And the global seal of biliteracy, which actually has the certifications and the endorsements and can be and is registered, which allows for more also a sense of connecting the achievement of a language to the maintenance and the use of that language. Powerful then in the work of heritage groups in this case that you're in specifically engaged with yours, correct?
Yes, definitely.
You know, Joy, on the website, I do have, based on, thank you, your sharing, three things that I think might make sure that the listeners know that you've provided: a mailing list so that they can understand what you're doing and be participants in it in that way, an invitation to participate in the conference in October of 2021, and an opportunity to let schools know, or if they are part of a school, to engage in that school survey. What do you want to make sure that people understand about what they're about to experience? Because you're right, I think a lot of us don't even know that the schools exist.
You mean as far as doing one of those three things, or?
Yeah, what are the benefits for the folks to make sure that they participate in the invitations that you're providing, Joy?
Well, if people sign up for our mailing list, they will get updates on what we are doing and what other people, what people in the community-based field are doing. And it won't be overwhelming at all because we only send a newsletter once a month or less. but you can definitely, like the questions you've been asking, and I've been saying, we published an article about Steve Levine's new book, and Fabrice Jameau also has a book coming out about bilingualism in the U.S. And so you get notifications about that, what's going on, what universities are offering in terms of courses regarding heritage language learners. Documenting schools, I mean, it would be just fabulous if we documented all of the schools teaching all of the languages.
Mm.
They do it in Australia. I was speaking with a person from New South Wales, and he said, yeah, we have this many schools teaching this many languages. And I'm going, whoa, you actually know that?
Wow.
Yeah, we don't. But one way that we could do it is if we could all gather together and document those schools. So one thing that even you, Nora, could do is, I'm just giving you as an example for what somebody else could do, is if you know of a school, a local community-based school, is just let them know about this survey. It only takes a few minutes, but it's very interesting to read about all the schools, and then we report on it every year at the conference, and we say, these are the schools, and this is what they're doing, and this is what they look like. And so that's a huge benefit to all the schools, and I think to other people, because one thing we talk about is, as I said it before, and that is, what benefit are these, could these schools bring to the public-private charter school community? What benefit? And there are lots of benefits that these schools could bring. And if people sign up for our newsletter, they'll learn about the outcomes of our survey and about what's going on in the field. And coming to the conference, we really try at the conference to focus on what community-based schools are doing. So that, but we bring in national leaders and ask them to take that focus.
Interesting.
So like this year, Amanda, we have a panel of organizational leaders. So Cal, JNCL, NHLRC, NFLC, sorry for saying all these letters. I hate it when people do that. Office of English Language Acquisition, ACTFL. Those leaders are going to talk about what do we do, what do we have that benefits community-based schools. But see, you can see that we're bringing them to focus their attention on community-based schools, but we're taking the community-based schools into the wider realm. And then we have workshops. And a few years ago, it's very interesting, people at our conference said, I want to know what to do. I don't want all this blah, blah. I want to know what to do.
Practical.
And so we really, besides, actually this year, the leaders are not only going to speak, but they're going to go into breakout groups so that people can spend 45 minutes with Joel Gomez at Cal, with Amanda Seawald at JNCL. So they can really spend time together. How often does that happen?
Very seldom. And what an energizing experience. I can see why those that you met might have been crying from joy.
Mm.
That's phenomenal. You know, part of the aspects of those seals too, Joy, coming back to this, and is that the heritage schools and the ability to provide for students to achieve a level of provable proficiency not only benefits the individual student, the individual that is studying, but also provides a bit of a warning for the school systems, if I may say, of the United States to go ahead and make sure to offer languages that are moving quickly, as your wonderful German example at the very open of this podcast was speaking about, moving too slowly in the Spanish class. Not that I'm encouraging rushing through things, but just how is it that students can gain fluency and energy and focus and therefore proficiency.
Right. Yeah, right. Thank you for saying that. Those are great things that you just said. And if we could work together, community-based schools and public schools, to ask ourselves those very questions that you just listed, wouldn't that be powerful?
It would be transformational. And yes, we need that transformation if we're going to provide for citizens that can find the kind of employment and the kind of wonderful experiences of life and connectedness that we all desire.
Right.
Joy, when you look out at the listeners here and you say, well, I've encouraged them to understand where we are, how to find us. I've encouraged them to let us know where we might find some more schools to be listed and so forth. What else do you want to invite them to think about, or maybe warn them about, or at least leave them with from this conversation today?
I would love for us to recognize community-based schools and Native American schools. Community-based heritage language schools and Native American schools, which are also, I would say, community-based, as part of the national language landscape, or we could say the national language learning landscape. Mm. So when we talk about languages, when we talk about language learning, we talk about opportunities to develop proficiency, we include those schools and those groups. And I will say that so far that rarely happens. So, I mean, you doing this and giving this opportunity is something that we in the community-based school world are not really used to. That is somebody saying, could you tell us what you do and what contribution it makes? Part of the national language learning landscape. That is what we would like to see. So anytime we talk about language learning, talk about language proficiency, we include community-based schools. Of course, they're not the leader. You know, they're not the best. They're not. We're not trying to be in a competition, but part of the world, part of the conversation.
Partnering, being part of the full conversation. Thank you for saying that so beautifully. And so before we end today, let's add one more item, okay? You ready? All right. Let's say that, for example, I said, I would like to go and find out what community-based language schools are in this area that I never knew existed. Mm-hmm. Now I know that such things can exist. Do you have a way that those that are now interested in finding out about their region can go about finding out about these schools?
Yes, and people have done that. People have contacted us. We would first send them to our map of schools, which is on our website.
Okay.
Where they can see where they, and then they can click on a language and find the schools that teach that language. So we would send them to our website, and then we would send them to the people who document schools, and that's Tommy Liu and his colleagues who do a survey, and they update the survey every quarter to say, actually, I often send people to Tommy, and I said, this person is here, and they're looking for this language. What do you know? And he tells them. And then I would also ask the language representatives working on that language and connect them with that person. Another thing we do is, and this is for people in the Washington, D.C. area, because that's where I am. Jose Viana, who used to be the director of the Office of English Language Acquisition, he wanted to visit some heritage language programs. And so we gave him a list of, okay, these are the programs that would be very good for you to visit. And he did.
Good.
Went and visited and had a fabulous time talking to the students. We've got pictures of him and the student. I mean, can you imagine having the director of Office of English Language Acquisition come and visit your school?
See, it's powerful. And that's the kind of connectedness to which you referred earlier in our conversation. That builds energy.
Yes. I mean, imagine how people would feel if you went and visited their school. It's like, whoa, wow, this, we must be worth something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I recommend visiting the schools. You will learn so much. Oh, man, I visited Abrace, a Portuguese school, and it was eye-opening. And I've been working in this field for a long time, but to see all the things that those people are doing. So thank you for asking about how can I find schools that I care about. Did I give a good answer?
You sure did. You sure did. And I would just like to make sure that I add again that people like to be recognized. You said it so beautifully, Joy. They like to be recognized for their skill in a language. Schools that teach like to be recognized for what they are contributing to the educational scene. Languages like to be recognized for their role that they played in the identity of individuals and cultures. We all like to be connected. We all like to be acknowledged and valued. And you have certainly been doing that now for decades, have done so again beautifully today. Thank you so much, Joy, for being my guest. And I will encourage again all listeners to go to my website, take a look at all of the information and the links that Joy has shared with us, and take action. Obviously, Joy, thanks for describing it, by the way. There are people standing there to be able to help. We're not on our own. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with your friends, family, and colleagues. Let's continue the conversation. Be sure to check out my website, fluencyonline.com, to learn more about our guests and to check out the resources and information they've shared with us there. I have other ideas, resources, and opportunities there for you too. Again, thanks so much for listening, and until next time.